The presenting sponsor of Moon Tower Soccer is FVF Law.
To find out what makes FVF a different kind of injury law firm, you can visit FVF.law.
Hello, friends. Thanks for listening to Moon Tower Soccer. This week, we'll review Austin's draw at home against the Philadelphia Union. We will preview the away match in Orlando, and we'll be joined by Nate Bucati for that part of it from MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. And then we'll talk about quite a few pieces of Austin FC news, including some international call-ups. My name is Landon Cottom, and I'm joined, as always, by Mr. Jeremiah Bentley.
Hey, everybody. I'm Jeremiah Bentley, and I am, I think, for the first time this year, coming from a random hotel room. Somewhere in Texas that's not in Austin. And I think there's, like, we just need to start off with this. I think this is a question from Ryan Parker in Los Verdes Slack about, I think it was maybe if the season continues to go poorly, like other things we could talk about. And so people had a lot of fun coming up with alternate tower family shows. And I'll start with the first one to give people sort of the lay of the land on how these go.
And these were contributed by many members of the Austin FC community.
Many of which are way funnier and more entertaining than we are. So that's why we're just going to read some of them with the explanations. And maybe pick a favorite of each. So the first one, just to get it off, was Broom Tower, which is curling. And there was also a second Broom Tower, which was related to witches of film and music. So I love that entry.
We have Gloom Tower, which is a podcast covering goth bands. And Flume Tower, which is a podcast covering amusement park rides.
It's specifically log rides. Were you a big flume guy?
I was strangely, like, wasted my roller coaster prime being, like, kind of afraid of them. And then I got into them, like, I don't know, in middle school or high school or whatever, and, like, loved them. And then now that I'm a little bit older, it makes me nauseous to even think about one. And so I had a few good years there, but no more.
Yeah, I did that on Sunday with my son and, like, walked around dizzy for 2 hours. Toon Tower, it's a discussion of the Disney cartoons.
Disney adults specifically, which is a whole thing.
Gosh, that's true. Yeah, very true. Groom Tower, which is Landon talking about beard, I guess, trimming maintenance. I don't know. I don't feel like there's a lot of trimming going on. Maybe just maintenance.
Oh, I trim, Jeremiah. Okay. I trim.
Okay.
It takes a lot of work to look this good.
Gotcha.
We've got Goodnight Moon Tower, which is us reading children's books. Boom Tower, which is, I think it was like
building
demolitions of famous buildings.
Yeah, demolitions of famous buildings.
I also saw a King of the Hill reference in the thread there, which was a take on Boomhauer.
So Boomhauer Tower would be that
I guess
one.
Boom Tower is our King of the Hill rewatch fan cast.
And then you have a favorite. Won't you share that
I
one?
Did. This one came from Kramer. He suggested the Reverend Sun Myung Moon Tower, a podcast. Actually, you know what? It sounded funnier in my head. It's what he wrote, which I think is hilarious. But this was an idea I had a while back of a similar conversation going on online, and someone asked, like, what would Moon Tower fans be called? And so I had the idea of Moonies, but I'm probably slightly too young to even really know what this is. But there was, like, a big religious cult in Korea whose leader was named Sun Myung Moon, and the followers were called Moonies. And it's kind of a fun thing to use, but I'm like, is that too close?
Is it a real
to
cult?
This? But Kramer was suggesting that we, like, reappropriate it and make it a positive thing again.
So, oh, I like that.
Listeners, let us know how you feel about being called Moonies, and maybe we can adopt that.
And if you have a favorite tower reference that rhymes with this, and we didn't get to all of them because there are a bunch of great ones, like, feel free to share those. If you were going to do one of these shows, Jackson. Gosh, sorry, Landon. Which one would you do?
Oh, man. Rereading here. I mean, the one I'm most knowledgeable about would be Groom Tower, beard grooming tips, but I feel like that's a few episodes and then we're done.
Yeah, I love Goodnight Moon Tower, which I feel like we could do as like a...
like a children's podcast.
Yeah, a children's podcast where we read books and then we talk about soccer in a very simplistic way to kids. I think that would be on brand for us too.
Or just don't talk about soccer and just read children's books and make a bunch of money off of it.
That'd be awesome. I don't know if we have the voices for that, though.
All right, let's jump into the story of the week this week. Austin FC played to a 2-2 draw at home against Philadelphia. First half, not so great. Austin jumped out to a lead and then shortly conceded an equalizer. Austin's now 12th in the West on 3 points from 4 matches. Jeremiah, I guess, where do we want to start here? What should we kick off the story of the week with?
Well, I think number one is that Austin actually got a goal from a forward, which is something that has not happened this year.
Yeah.
And honestly, hasn't happened a whole lot in the history of this club. So it was nice to see Diego Rubio do that. And was there anything particular about the way Austin lined up that led this to happen? Or is it just like eventually just the law of averages leads, like a goal is going to be scored by a forward?
I mean, I would just say that there in the second half, we actually had some good attacking momentum and we're creating chances in the attacking half. And so what was the game where, was it St. Louis where
Julio and Hedges scored the 2 goals in that one?
Yeah. So in that one, we just didn't get that many chances in the attacking half. So I think it made sense that if goals were going to come, it was going to come off of set pieces and that's where it came from. So I think in this one, it does like show something that, okay, we are actually just creating some chances and getting into dangerous spots in the attacking half. And so our forwards had even a little bit of an opportunity to score, which was more than we could say for a lot of these games.
Yeah. And so maybe the next thing to talk about is that there were some subs right after the half that seemed to make a big difference. And that's something that's not always happened for Austin. So maybe walk through like, sort of where I think Danny's is maybe the most impactful overall, where he moved, and then the John Gallagher move both.
I would say Owen Wolf was also impactful in the game.
True.
I think this is by far his best game this season for sure. But yeah, we saw Johan Valencia start at the 6 in the first half, and then Guilherme Biru gets his first start at left back. Valencia was playing as a lone 6 with Danny and Alex Ring is the two like dual tens in front of him, and it was not working very well. And then Biru was also, we can get into this a little bit later, but looked a little bit out of sorts. And so both of those guys get pulled at the half. Danny moves back to the 6 and the buildup instantly looks a lot better. He's moving the ball forward a lot faster. And then Jean Kolmanich gets injured like, I don't know, less than 10 minutes into the first half. And so they put Hector Jimenez on, move him to right back, move Gallagher to left back. And he was able to make an impact with that second goal. But I thought Owen Wolf had a really good game too, and just came in and brought a lot of energy and confidence into the attack that wasn't happening there before.
Yes. Yeah, so maybe you talked about this, I think off air with our interview, guest for the game preview, but like where do you see Owen Wolf at his best, and like how do we get that out of this match?
Man, I like, yeah, he started off as one of those dual tens, but the way that Austin was playing this week, Alex Ring was doing it when he was there, and then Owen was doing it as he came on, where in kind of the like the build up phase as they were crossing midfield, those tens would pull wide and create a triangle with the 6 or one of the wings and the fullback. And so moving wide and then just kind of his movement and his energy was really causing problems for Philadelphia. So I generally have not liked Owen Wolf as a winger, but he moved there later in the game and still was giving them some trouble. So I think with the way that Austin is playing this year, I wouldn't mind seeing him some at the wing, but I still do think that his best position probably projects as like a box to box 8. And I just really hope he can kind of find his confidence there, because in this game, he came in and just seemed like he wasn't thinking, just pinned his ears back and was going full bore the whole second half. And we often see him acting a little bit timid, a little bit conservative with the way he plays. And that did not happen in this game. So regardless of where he is on the field, I think that is kind of the key of unlocking Owen Wolf, is just like getting him to play with freedom, with bravery, with just that energy that he brought in this game, because we haven't always seen that.
Yeah, and do you think, is he a victim of just being sort of a jack of all trades? So like not having a nailed down spot and not knowing his place, do you think that's a little bit of what led to that?
I think a little bit of that, and then just being young. We forget how young this guy is. He's still 18, I think, right? Maybe, is he 19 yet? Whatever. He's a teenager still. So, I'm hoping it's just a thing he'll grow out of, and he'll get some confidence and learn like, oh, I can do this and beat grown men doing it.
And then, so ultimately, we said 2-2 draw at home. Austin now 12th in the West on 3 points for 4 matches, 1 point out of the 9th playoff spot. Like, should we be satisfied with this match and then with the results to date so far? Because I think one of the things that I hadn't really thought about, but is true, is like this is Austin's worst 4-game start out of points, but also the competition's been pretty good. I don't know. I was super annoyed watching the post-game press conference on Sunday when Josh Wolf talked about how good the opponents had been, and I don't know, didn't seem to take a lot of responsibility for it. I'm less annoyed today. This is also why I'm super happy that we have we have 2 days between the game and the show, because I would have a lot more hot takes usually on Sunday. And then by Monday, I kind of settle down and rewatch the game and feel a little bit differently about it. But I don't know, man. How are you feeling right now?
I mean, yeah, I guess it's all a matter of mindset and expectations. And I think I've settled into a place where I think I know what this team is and what they're capable of, and my expectations are fairly low. And so when they show me anything that looks like they might win a soccer game, I come out of it feeling fairly positive. And like this one was super disappointing and really annoying and frustrating to watch for large stretches, especially in the first half. But I think in the second half, when those changes got made, when certain players came on and the way that they were playing, it was the best we've seen them look all season, in my opinion. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say like we should feel great about this team or about this result, but in context of what this season and what this roster is, I felt fairly positive coming out of this one.
Yeah, I think you hit on it. It's just hard. Austin's almost a victim of its own success for 2022, where maybe the expectations got a little high. And one of the things when I was doing the research for this Orlando City match, it's like I had forgotten how bad Orlando was for what, 5 years? I think they've
yeah,
I think
four it didn't or five make years.
Yeah, 5 years and finished 11th or 12th every year. And that made me really, really nervous about what might happen in Austin and how it can go wrong. But, you know, they finally got it right. Now with Pareja, they're in a lot better place. But, I get the frustration for sure, I guess is what I would say. And I am feeling a lot of that too.
Because it's not fun to be a fan of a bad soccer team.
Exactly. I guess that's the point. And we're 4 games into the year, you know? And so let's see 8 or 10 games in what Austin looks like.
Yeah.
And I may have a stronger opinion about whether there needs to be a change or not at that point.
And I'll say after the first 2 games against Minnesota and Seattle, I looked at this team and like thinking about where results and where points were going to come from. And I was like, I don't know. I don't think this team can win a game this year. Like if they play like this every game, they'll lose most of them and maybe draw a few. And then in the St. Louis game, the way that they played for stretches during that game, I was like, okay, once Driussi is back, this is a team that can win some games, probably not a lot of games, but this team with Driussi could win some games. And then I think this Philadelphia game is a step up even more. Like the way they played in that second half, if you can harness some of that energy for even half of a game and plug Driussi into it, I think that is a team that could maybe stay in the hunt for the playoffs until summer. And if the reinforcements can come in and get us over the line, maybe we'll be playing postseason soccer. But again, it's all about where you set that line of expectations. But relatively speaking, I feel slightly encouraged by this game.
Yeah, I think that's an important point, is this is a long season. I've spent a lot of time this week for some reason I talk to people who like, not for some reason, just because they're like people who like go to games, are not super in tune to it. And they're like, why are we not better? Like, when's that going to happen? And then like having to explain the, basically the best case scenario here is like, stay within striking distance of the playoff line until the summer comes. And maybe there's a brand new DP rule that the league adopts in the summer that hasn't happened yet or whatever, you know, and then the reinforcements come. And that's really when there's potential for Austin to be better. And you just have to be patient with this club right now for that outcome, which is not satisfying as a fan, I don't think, but it's reality.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and get into the details of this game. No one is around. Muntar Soccer is brought to you by our friends at FEF Law, the official injury lawyers of Austin FC.
FEF is a different kind of personal injury law firm dedicated to community, transparency, and client education. And they have their own podcast called Summary Judgment. Check it out wherever you get your podcasts.
You can go to fef.law to find out what makes FEF a different kind of injury law firm and why understanding your legal options can dramatically change the outcome of a case. Once again, that's fef.law. Amplify Credit Union is a member-owned financial cooperative that served the needs of Central Texans for over five decades. Amplify's team lives and works in the community, making them the experts on how members can achieve their financial goals.
What makes Amplify different? No bank fees. Amplify is the first financial institution in Texas to put an end to bank fees. In 2022, Americans paid almost $8 billion in overdraft fees alone. Millennials pay an average $336 a year in bank fees, which works out to six Austin FC game tickets per person per year. You'll pay none of those fees with Amplify Credit Union.
Amplify membership is open to any Texas resident. Learn to trust your bank again at AmplifyCreditUnion.com. To learn more about Amplify Credit Union and learn more about the free parking they're offering to Moon Tower Soccer listeners, you can go to www.goamplify.com/moontower-soccer. All right, we are back. So leading up to this game, one of the big questions was, is Driussi going to be ready to play this time? We saw him on the bench the week before, but it seemed like it was never really even in the cards for him to play in that one. But this time it seemed like a bit more of a reality, and we got a bit of a tease that that might be the case, right?
Yeah, we did. So Michelle Sanchez on a Rincon Verde podcast had an interview which led one to believe that he was going to be more, he's going to be a part of the, be a part of the club and not just like sitting on the bench as an idle threat, which I think led to a lot of excitement that day about what it might look like for Austin FC. The other news we got was another short-term loan call-up for Jimmy Farkerloon. and I guess that's his second that he's used now. So like there's four total, I believe, per year, regardless of whether somebody plays or not, that that can happen.
Four per player.
Per player, right.
Yeah.
No, he's used to. So, I mean, what do we make of these? Like, should people expect anything out of it? Is it just, it's like an emergency situation and it's not really a chance to prove, for a player to prove himself? You know, how, you know, he's what, we're going to be five, no, we were four games in and he's already, we've already burned two, you know, and this guy, like, how do you see this short-term loan deal working? And like, what's your expectations be? Because people get really excited when people that they want to see play get a call up, and it doesn't seem like there's like really potential that that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my advice would be don't get excited when you see these guys, because I mean, just like historically speaking, we've shown that like Josh Wolf is not the type to just throw in a young unproven player. But also, like, I think I was talking to at the Austin FC 2 game, Adier Silva was asking me like, would you play Jimmy in this game, if you were the coach? Like, I've seen him play for 10 minutes. I do not know. Like, we're not in training. We don't know what he looks like against first team quality. And all we've gotten was like a few highlights of the goals he scored in preseason. So, I mean, he looks exciting, but like, I don't know. So the main point is like, they have to have someone there. I think one of the more interesting parts about this is that they have CJ Fodre, who is on a first team contract that they could have just put on the bench and chose to call up Jimmy instead of him. So Wolf said that it had to do with like fitness, and like CJ's path to the first team is through playing minutes with the second team and getting his fitness back up. So CJ went 90 with the second team on Friday night. And so it seemed that he's doing that. But I mean, if it's just about putting like the best option on the bench, I could see this potentially being a thing where it, like, do you think it could be like Wolf sending a message to CJ? Like, hey, step it up, buddy.
I mean, I can see that. I can see where Wolf has different expectations for CJ and wants him to have to prove himself a little bit. And like moves like this are kind of a way to keep him hungry or make him compete or whatever. I mean, I think the other point around having him on the bench and not playing is like, who are you taking off for those minutes to come from? Because every minute that Jimmy plays is a minute somebody else is not playing. And
right.
I don't think there's any, I mean, between the starters and like the substitutions, I don't know where you put him. I don't know who else you put him on instead of on the
field. In a game that Ethan Finley didn't see the field.
Yeah.
I understand Jimmy brings a different skill set, but it is still a very unproven skill set and a young player who's never played against high competition because he didn't go to, he went to two different colleges. Neither of them were like big college powerhouses playing against these other huge programs every week. So he is very unproven and will likely need some growing time. And so as excited as we are about him, I don't think you could expect him to step onto the field and just like kill it consistently. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to watch using two of those loans on him, especially with these attacking players. It's probably not that much of an issue because we have quite a few wingers. So I think if you use all the loans and he's not good enough to think like, okay, we should put him on the first team, then that's fine. If he is good enough, then maybe you sign him to a contract and use one of those supplemental spots on him. But I don't know. I figure it'll work itself out. The defensive side is a little more interesting to me because with this upcoming week, if we see Antonio Gomez get another short-term loan, is that three for him at this point?
I think that would be three. Yeah, three in five matches. Then it becomes, you almost have to say, and they have the availability, right? They have the flexibility now with this open spots on the supplemental roster to do that, but you almost have to at this point.
Yeah, but that gets into like using up valuable roster spots for guys because of emergency situations and not necessarily because they're someone you think can help your first team long term, which is a thing I imagine they want to avoid.
It's also not great for sure. For sure. Well, let's talk about the lineup because there were a couple changes. Stuver at the back, Gallagher, Hedges, Cascante. So Biru gets his first start. We can get into how he played. Ring, Valencia, and Pereira in the midfield. Obreon Rubio and Emiliano Rigoni up front.
And in this midfield, I think it's important to point out, I think we mentioned it a bit earlier, but it was more that like 1-2 midfield with Valencia in like the offensive shape as a lone six. And then the buildup was back there on his own. And I think that was something that really ended up hurting Austin. He's done fine in that spot at times, but in the buildup, he didn't seem to really want the ball sometimes. And this is a thing I wasn't sure what they were trying to do exactly because they would Stuver would frequently play the ball to a center back who would then play it out to the fullback. They would look up the sideline and the tens, so like Ring and Danny were running wide to give an option there, but it seemed to often come too late and they were marked anyway. And then Valencia was kind of just standing still in the middle of the field. And so I'm not sure exactly what the plan was, but it was not working. And then in the second half, we saw Danny move to that spot and he was much more active in seeking out the ball, trying to get on the ball, and it was much more effective there. So I don't know if that was a breakdown in what Valencia was supposed to be doing or if it was a breakdown in what someone further up the field was supposed to be doing, but it was not working. We were just getting put into really tough situations building out of the back over and over.
Yeah, so we talked about the subs being a positive. So you would agree that definitely Valencia, for whatever reason, it's just like it wasn't his night. And so it was time for him to come out and change the way they were playing.
Yeah, talking about Biru having kind of a tough night, getting into moments during the match. So he almost gives a ball away in the box. I don't know if you remember this, playing a ball on the ground across, like from very wide all the way across his own box. A Philly player almost gets a foot on it. And the following sequence, it ends up in a turnover in the midfield. Yoan Valencia fouls a player on the edge of the 18, and they set up for a free kick. In this free kick is what it leads to the penalty that leads to Philly's first goal. And so these things have kind of a butterfly effect on everything. But on this free kick, Philly kind of pokes the ball to Kai Wagner to get a better angle. He hits it with his left foot. As they take that first touch, Beer and Ring start charging. We see the shot get deflected, goes out for a corner, but then they go to VAR and a penalty is given for a handball on Alex Ring. I guess what did you see in the stadium and what were your thoughts then?
Well, it's hard for me a little bit to follow in the stadium. In the stadium, my first question was like, was he even in, you know, in the, like, was he even in the box? Which obviously watching the video later, that part was obvious. I was a little bit, it didn't seem clear and obvious at the time, and it didn't seem when I watched it the first time, but I think the question is really the unnatural position part of it, right? The question is like, it's not whether he was in the box or not, but like, did he turn himself to make himself in an unnatural position? I don't know if I saw an angle that convinces me of it, but I think we may not agree on this too.
Yeah, I mean, after watching the replays at a few different angles, the very first replay they showed on the broadcast, in the stadium, I had no clue. I saw the ball deflect and I didn't know what happened.
Same. But
on the rewatch, the first replay they show shows Ring jumping and the top half of his arm, like above his elbow, is pinned to his side, but he turns sideways and from his elbow down is like at a right angle off of his body. And the ball seems to hit his hand there. And so if it goes off his bicep, okay, I say that's the natural position, don't give it. But it hits his hand, which is sticking out from his body. And so I'm like, okay, that hit his hand. Was he in the box? And so I like slowed it down and watched it and replayed it. And watching from where his feet land, I was like, I think he was in the box still. And then a few minutes later in the broadcast, they show an angle that's like right down
super
that
clear.
Line.
Yeah,
he's
right
like a
line,
yard
yeah.
inside the box. So I think this is a clear penalty. I've got no complaints about this. I will say, however, I thought the refereeing was quite poor. They got this one right, but overall, I thought they were extremely inconsistent about what was a foul and what wasn't a foul. There was some things that like Yoan Valencia was playing aggressively, but so were Philly's players, right? Like they have a ton of aggressive players and sometimes he would get called for something and then something would go the other way and it wouldn't get called that way. And then there's, do you remember that slide tackle that Julio made on the outside of the box there in the north end?
Yes.
That looked like just a really good, clean tackle. He wins the ball, takes out the player in the moment. His studs aren't pointing towards the player or anything. I thought it was a completely clean tackle. They blow the whistle and give Julio a yellow card. And I'm just like, there's the assistant referee was right there watching the whole thing. I don't understand how they give that. But there was a lot of moments like that where I thought they were quite poor. I know we said after like the first game of the season, we're like, these replacements are doing fairly well. But that seems to have
turned.
I've turned a little bit. And Derek Ensign actually shared this this Twitter account. I can't remember this guy's name, but I think it's a retired referee who's been posting like metrics of how these replacements are doing compared to the guys from last year. And like by the numbers, like they're having to go to VAR more than the people last year did. And that there's like numbers to suggest that these crews are doing a worse job.
Yeah, and I think the thing that makes people who are followed super closely even more annoyed is apparently there's like a real movement on behalf of the league to coach the announcers and others to like pretend like that's not true, which
yeah
makes it even more frustrating when people see the things that they see.
Yeah. Speaking of Derek Ensign, he started a change.org petition trying to get fans from around the league to kind of organize and vote with their wallets a little bit. And so if you're interested in taking part in that, we'll put that link in the show notes and you can find out some more information about that.
Yeah, and it was interesting, the numbers that he put out there were not, I guess it was basically, what is this, $3 million is effectively the net cost of the numbers between what the referees want and what they're getting. And so that works out to 95 fans per club who don't spend $32 a match makes up that $3 million already, which I think just points out sort of the absurdity of, doesn't seem like a lot of money for a league that is making a lot of money and has a lot of risk if the referees look like they're incompetent.
Yeah. So later on, Diego Rubio gets a chance. I think this is the 37th minute. There's an errant pass from the Union that goes straight to Rubio. He turns, drives at the two defenders that are on the other side of him, carries it to the top of the box. As he starts to wind up to shoot, Damian Lowe has already committed to him, and he has Obreon streaking to the right, into the box on his right side, and decides to go ahead and shoot anyway. And Obreon was yelling at him. He turns and apologizes to Obreon. And then in the broadcast, I saw again that the camera kind of flashes to him and he like slapped himself on the head. Like, what am I thinking? But skied it over when, if he just slips that ball into Obreon, Obreon gets a shot 1v1 with the keeper from, I don't know, 8 yards out.
Yeah, I don't remember all of them, but I felt like in this match there were more balls into the 10th row than you usually see in an Austin match, or and play probably balls that should have been played another way.
Yeah. So we mentioned those subs that came on at halftime. This is when the game really starts to shift. And if you look at whatever your app of choice is, FotMob, SofaScore, whatever, those momentum charts, you can see it, that there's the green bars are a lot taller starting with just right after halftime and really get a lot of momentum leading to those two goals. So before the first one, we talk about Jean Colmenich going down. Hector Jimenez comes on, and as he goes down, and it took quite a while for them to get him off the field, and I couldn't quite tell who they're putting on. And as I see Hector Jimenez go over to the fourth official, Ashley, and we took one of her friends to the game with us, they were laughing at me, but I said, "They're putting Hector on? Oh, no."
I was watching them, and they were like holding the 16 jersey, because the corner where the guys are warming up is right where my seat is, you know, and like they were holding up the 16 jersey on the side. Like, I don't even think Hector was expecting Hector to go in, because like it took a long time for everybody that was warming up to register that he was the player they were asking for, and for him to come over too.
This reminds me of one of my favorite scenes from any movie ever, which is in Little Giants, where they run the play in, they say, "Pitch to Johnny," and then it cuts to a kid, "Pitch to Johnny, but I'm Johnny." But I mean, Hector Jimenez proved me wrong. He had a really good 30 minutes or whatever it was that he played. To be fair and to myself, I guess, my concerns with Hector Jimenez are strictly defensively. He's proven over and over that he can provide a spark in the attacking half. And in this game where we were down one and needed some offensive spark, Hector was able to, he didn't bring it on his own, but he was able to be a part of that and help create that with others who were on the field. Good performance from Hector. I still don't know that we'll expect to see a ton of him, just because he does have some physical limits at this point in his career. But good showing, and good to know that we can throw him on in moments like this and still get a performance out of him.
Yeah, except for what we'll talk about, we may not have much of a choice either, given we'll find out on Thursday sort of John's situation. But that is a very thin fullback position if he's out for any amount of time. And given that maybe Beaver's either not fit or not ready or whatever to play 90 minutes. And I think the thing that people are probably, I mean, Hector made an impact, but I think he came on at 55 and made an assist on this Rubio goal at 56.
It was his first offensive involvement.
Impact.
Yeah. So, 56 minute, like you said. Yeah. And this, there's a lot of these halftime changes that were involved in this goal. So Danny had moved back to the six. And so he is involved in the buildup that gets the ball forward quickly. And Alex Ring has the ball up on the left-hand side, does well to find Owen with this like long square ball to the middle of the pitch, which is a ball I feel like we never hit. Like either there's nobody there or the guys out wide aren't looking for it. But it's a thing that like, that's the most dangerous part of the field, right? They call it zone 14, like the top of the box there. And it seems like we very rarely make passes into that area of the field. And Owen, again, I talked about his energy and movement. He ran from the opposite side of the field as play was developing there and was running into the box. And as he realizes that Ring's probably gonna have to cut it back, he drops into that space and Ring finds him, cuts it across. He switches it to Hector. Hector puts in a cross, and talking about like crossing in good moments versus bad moments, this is a good moment where you switch it. And as the defense is shifting and adjusting to that switch, we have four or five guys from the middle of the box and over on that backside all crashing into the box. And so Hector puts in a cross. I think it deflects off of Kai Wagner's head. So I'm not entirely sure where the ball was going to go, but it ends up going right past all of their defenders and falls right into Diego Rubio's path. And he heads it in really well to beat Andre Blake. One other thing I noticed in the rewatch is Alex Ring was on that side as well. I think if Alex Ring had been closer or involved in that play at all, it would have been called back for offside, because I think he was a half step offside whenever Hector plays the ball.
So that knots it at one, and then it did not take long. I feel like the singing had just stopped. The unintentional flames of the smoke box had just gone out. Austin picked another one up to take the lead. John Gallagher switching sides and scoring the goal to put Austin ahead.
Yeah, and again, this is starts off with some combination play from Hector and Owen on that right-hand side. And Owen, if you watch Owen's movement, he just never stops moving, and he checks too, and then O'Brien is there, and so he makes a run in behind and then loops it back and comes back and is an option. And because of that movement, he's got a lot of space in behind, and so whenever Hector gets the ball to him, he turns and is able to drive and puts the defense on skates and then plays that square ball into the middle of the box. I think he was probably aiming for Rubio or Ring. They're both approaching the ball from opposite sides. I think Ring gets a little bit of a foot to it, but neither of them do. But because we had good shape in that moment, Gallagher is on the backside and is kind of crashing as that ball's coming in, and it falls to him, and he's there to put in a really nice finish, frankly. Like we had a really good angle from our seats into that goal, and the way that he kind of finesses that ball into the corner it's a really solid finish from him.
Yeah, my view of that goal was that I thought that I was going to be sad because it was a blown opportunity, and then John Gallagher came out of nowhere. Because I saw the other guys that missed it. So that puts Austin ahead 2-1 for what, 7-ish minutes before Philly knots it back up.
Yeah, and I saw somewhere, I don't know how we were talking before we started recording, how I've mostly been just like not looking at the internet on the weekends, which has been really good for me. But tell me if you saw this more widespread, that somebody was complaining that Josh Wolf went too defensive early in this game.
I didn't see
that. Did you see anybody else say that? Maybe it was just one person I saw saying that.
I didn't see a lot of that on this game, and I don't buy it.
Regardless, it just didn't happen. Like Austin never went defensive in this game because we scored those two goals, and then Philly scores pretty much instantly after that. And like it was a pretty wide open game for the rest of the game. And there was never a bunker moment. We talked about in the last game, we were bunkered, but because St. Louis made us do it. But in this one, it was kind of open. I never saw a defensive shift at all, really.
Yeah, if you look at the second half, Austin, more shots, more accurate passes, you know, more possession, but we see that a lot. You know, XG is pretty even. I didn't see Austin like sit back at all. It was just kind of... The Philly
Talking
goal
about
did what it did.
But butterfly effect of events, if you go back to kind of the beginning of the sequence that Philly scored on, O'Brien or Gallagher, somebody clears, or maybe I think it was Jimenez. He clears it out of the box towards the center of the field because he sees Ring in space there. And so a smart play by Jimenez there, but Ring like lets it bounce twice And he's got two Philly players coming at him pretty hard. And he just keeps letting it bounce. And then when he finally goes to it, Martinez comes in and wins the ball and plays it out wide. And they're able to slip Harriel into the backside. And he plays in a hard low cross. It looked like Cascante was crashing the near post and Stuver was going down. And it looked like Stuver kind of saw Cascante out of his eye and was like worried to get a full extension because he was afraid he's going to dive into him. I could be reading this wrong, but he doesn't get a full extension, so doesn't completely stop the ball, and it trickles onto the backside for someone to finish it there. So again, like no one person to blame, like many Austin FC goals, but a lot of people could have stopped it probably.
Yeah, and then from that point out, I don't remember, there were not a lot of dangerous chances on either side, I don't believe. Were there from that point out?
I'm sure there's some that I'm not thinking of, but
I mean, Driussi came in and made a little bit of magic and
yeah,
some
Driussi hits one with his left foot that in the end went several feet wide, but was a good moment. And just like a reminder that if the ball falls to him in the right part of the field, like he can make magic happen sometimes. Driussi's first touch of the game was a nutmeg of El Brujo Martinez, which is pretty great too. So hopefully we get more of that in the near future. But yeah, I don't think there were a ton of huge opportunities after that point.
Yeah, and Driussi, so he plays 20-ish minutes, does have an impact on the game. To your point, that's the only time that my only thought about Austin maybe picking up a win late was just Driussi magic what could happen, and it almost did. But it didn't, and so Austin ends up with a probably what should be the right outcome of this match, a 2-2 draw at home against Philadelphia. Looking forward to hopefully getting him healthy and having a little more productive output next weekend. Is there any players we didn't talk about that you want to talk about? Or there's an injury thing that we need to discuss too.
Yeah, I don't know if it was specific to this game or just my mood at the time, but Emiliano Regroni drove me crazy in this game. I saw Kevin Morris talking about this online somewhere about Regroni being 1v1 in several moments and doing nothing with it. And this is a thing I get that we haven't won in a long time, and that Josh Wolf does not go out of his way to endear himself to anybody. And so if you don't like the guy, fair enough. But this is one of the moments where I like to push back at like folks who suggest that Wolf's system and the tactics are entirely the problem. In positional play, one of the things that you want to try to do, if you watch Pep Guardiola's teams, this is a thing that happens all the time where you kind of have the play on one side, you switch to the opposite wing, and you get your winger 1v1 with someone. We got Emiliano Regroni 1v1 with Nathan Harriel many times, more than five, maybe closer to 10. And he never created anything dangerous out of any of those opportunities. And that just can't happen. Like this is one of these moments where I'm like, the system is not all bad. Like there's really good moments happening in this system that the players are not taking advantage of and not executing properly. And this is an example of it where I wanted to believe that Regroni could be good in the right situation. He's getting put in the situations to succeed, and he's not doing it still.
Yeah, and I do agree with that. And so I think, I mean, the hope at this point forward is just we pay him a bunch of money to not play, because I don't think that the results are going to come. I think at this point there's been enough experience that shows that he's not going to take advantage of the moment, and Austin can't afford to buy him out. So it becomes like you just got a really sort of an albatross sitting on the bench.
Any other players you wanted to talk about before we take a break?
No, I think we hit on everybody that was notable for good or bad. So let's go ahead and take a break.
Okay, well, we're going to take a break, come back with a few other pieces of Austin FC news, including international call-ups. And then we're going to be joined by Nate Bucati to help us preview the Orlando City match coming up.
Our premier sponsor, McGuire Woods Consulting, helps clients in the public affairs space, from lobbying at the local, statewide, and federal levels to digital and communications campaigns across the country.
McGuire Woods Consulting has offices in 10 MLS cities, but only advertises on this podcast because it's home of the two-time reigning Copa Tejas champions. Contact our friends at McGuire Woods Consulting at mwcllc.com for more information.
Moon Tower Soccer is brought to you by Sage Wilson Realty. The Sage Wilson team is made up of Austin experts who are client-focused and have over 30 years of combined real estate experience. They will also be giving away two tickets to an upcoming match, so fill out the form and the show notes for your chance to win.
If you or someone you know are in need of Sage real estate advice in Austin, talk to our friends at Sage Wilson Realty. Be sure to check them out online at sagewilson.com. All right, we are back. Before we get to our Orlando preview, we're going to jump into some Austin FC news. Let's start with the international call-up. So we have two this window. So we'll be missing Danny Pereira for two friendlies with Venezuela, and then Julio Cascante for a couple of friendlies with Costa Rica.
And good for them. Is this the first time that we've had like players where the season's been going on and we've missed players for an international call-up?
I don't think so. That can't be right, can it?
I don't know. I was thinking this might have been one of the first time where it wasn't an official window and anybody got called up.
I think Vaisanen missed at least a game.
Okay. That's entirely possible. I was not thinking about him. I've kind of forgotten now that he's a player, which transitions to the fact that like these call-ups are complicated by injuries. So we knew Vaisanen was out with some kind of plantar issue, but now Josh Wolf in the post game said it was a tear in the plantar, and maybe he was being imprecise, but that seems like more serious than what we thought it might be in terms of how long he was going to be out, which leaves Austin very thin at center back. And we don't know now, but John Kolmanich seemed to think that he had a pretty serious thing happen when he came out 10 minutes after going in. Which could make the fullback position thin, but we really won't know until at least, we won't know anything until at least Thursday, right?
Kolmanich looked like a hamstring, and even if it's a minor hamstring, like that doesn't get better in 6 days. Like, I'd say at the very earliest we could expect him is like maybe to be on the bench for the following week. So I am not getting my hopes up that Kolmanich will be available, meaning that Guilherme Biru, whatever was going on the other night, like they're going to have to figure it out, right? Like,
yeah. Cause it's him, Gallagher, Jimenez, right? Those are your three.
Yeah, you could say Owen Wolf would be an option, but with Danny out, like Owen might start in the midfield.
So yeah, things are not great all the way around on that front. I guess Orlando has more players out, but Austin's not in a great spot. Hopefully these aren't longer term than just this week, because then it becomes a real challenge.
Yeah, and I would expect against Orlando to see Matt Hedges and Brendan Heinzeich start at center back. And then probably Guilherme Biru gets the start again. Just if Jean were here, maybe he would, but out of the options available. And like talking about Biru, the skill is clearly there. The man is a talented soccer player. And so I'm not worried about that part. It seems like he needs maybe a bit more time to get a bit more fit, a bit more like gel with the team a little bit more, learn his responsibilities and the patterns of play. But talent wise, I'm convinced by the man. He looks like a good player. So hopefully a week of training, watching some video can get him a bit more on the same page with everyone. Then at center back, you start Heinzeich, and then I'm guessing maybe bring up Antonio Gomez on a short-term loan again, which would be his third, I think. And then I guess Alex Ring is next in line after that.
Except that you need him in the midfield too, right? So it becomes right. Super challenging.
Yeah. And in the midfield, I guess who are you expecting to see in the midfield? I guess let's say in the case Drewsi is not available to start.
So I think that you go with Valencia, despite what just happened last week, Ring. And I mean, I'd like to see Diego Rubio there, given the potential that that combination showed against St. Louis. And maybe he doesn't run himself out quite as much because Orlando plays a different style than St. Louis does. And yeah, that seems to be the best option.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see it being, if they want Rubio as the nine, I could see it being any combination of the, I guess there's only.
You see all three of them there. I see Valencia, Wolf, and Ring. And
yeah, there's only those three.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's right. And then, yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing Rubio as the 10 again, and you play Ring and either Wolf or Valencia, whoever they think is the best option there. And then, I mean, on the wing, like, nobody's given us much reason to have a ton of confidence. So I guess just flip a coin and throw whoever out.
Yeah, I would go with Obreon and Finley. But, yeah, it's not, nobody's a world beater.
What other news do we have?
I was going to say, like, sort of looking a week ahead, because after the Orlando match, Austin plays FC Dallas for the first time, and we did get some Copa Tejas news. So last year, because his schedule's unbalanced, there's like not a great choice about what to do. But last year, the first two matches, I believe, were excluded. This year, every match will count, and then the Copa Tejas will just go to the team with the highest average from among those matches. So this Dallas game, as the ad says, is relevant to the greatest trophy in all of professional sports. And then there's some other agreements around, like, sort of the cup being more integrated into the presentation. Like, maybe there will be the chance to celebrate for away fans. There will be like some pregame presentation and stuff like that. So it seems like there's this cup is building some more legitimacy, maybe, like, with the league too, which is good to see.
We also got an announcement about League's Cup, which we weren't quite sure what was going to happen. So that first year that we played in it, Austin Finnett was a high seed, and so we got seeded as a host team. This year, that wasn't necessarily going to be the case, but it seems like the highest seed either chose or was given the option of several locations and chose Austin as their home Austin. Base. So
yeah,
we will end up having two home group games in League's Cup here in Austin, and then there's going to be a third game between the other two teams happening here as well.
Yeah, and so I believe if you're a season ticket holder, you get both the Austin games. You'll have to buy the other one regardless. But yes, Austin FC versus Pumas and CF Monterrey. Pumas on Friday, July 26th, and Monterrey on Tuesday, July 30th. And then if Austin goes further, we'll see kind of what comes out of that.
Go ahead.
I was going to ask, did you go to the FC Toe match?
I did. Yeah, so we got the Austin FC 2 home or season opener, and they're going to be playing in U.S. Open Cup the day this comes out on Tuesday. And so, yeah, I got a glimpse at what this team is going to look like. It's going to be a much younger team. I don't think we should necessarily have our expectations set for MLS Next Pro champions again this year. I don't think they're going to be challenging for that, but I think we can be excited to see a bunch of young players coming through this team and hopefully guys who could be like those first products we move up into the first team. So they ended up losing 3-1, I believe was the final score, to Tacoma Defiance, which is Seattle's second team. There was a red card fairly early in the second half, so that kind of...
That's what really seemed to change the game up a lot, right? I watched it.
Tacoma was the better team the whole night. I think it's also worth mentioning that Austin FC 2 is missing quite a few players as well. So Bobosi Biarawanga was in the stands, seemed to be nursing an injury. Cheick Torre in the same situation. New fullback from Spain, Ruben Bonachero, was not suited up, did not play. Who else? I feel like there's... Oh, Irvin Torres, who's a young kid that I'm expecting to get some minutes with this team, did not play. And so they had a lot of, like, academy and kind of these, amateur agreement kind of guys. There's probably six or seven of those guys on the bench. And so I counted at least 10 teenagers in the squad on the night, including Gavin Wolf and Joel Reyna, who are the 16-year-old kids of Josh Wolf and Claudio Reyna. So a lot of youth going to be at least around this team, if not playing. And so it's going to be an interesting season, but they did not look bad by any means. I think once they get some of these more experienced players back in the lineup, they'll still be a really solid team.
Yeah, I think between the academy and the returning players, like there's a lot of names on this roster they put out that I think a lot of people are going to recognize. And it was just like a weird situation because some of them didn't play, some of them were like Jimmy was with the first team, so probably different expectations, but still should be a fun environment and fun club to watch. And they got their new jersey like with the star on the top, which was cool. And I've seen some people who feel like the second team jerseys are better than the first team ones, and I'm interested to see if they go out for sale, if they will. I love the armadillo kit, but I do like, I think I like the black FC2 jersey a lot too.
Yeah, I mean, we did our rankings, our jersey rankings a while back. I think I would put both of these kits above the white, the original white kit, but probably none of the
others. None of the others? Oh, really? Okay. I like one of them a little bit better than that. But the star is cool too.
Yeah, that part's beautiful.
Yeah. Okay. I think you want to just transition to the interview and the preview?
Yeah, let's do that. So Nate Bucati is going to be joining us. He did a lot of MLS games for Fox last year and is doing, I think, both this year, but doing more for Apple. But we really enjoyed talking to him. He is a guy who seems to really do his homework. And I want to defend him before we get in. He didn't know about all the international call-ups for Orlando. And just so you know, like a lot of that information came out today. And so I just wanted to defend Nate because he was extremely knowledgeable. We ended up talking to him after we stopped recording for a while. Really smart guy, does his homework, really tries to plug in. And so he's going to know his stuff come Saturday. All right, we're very happy to be joined today by Nate Bucati. Nate will be on the call this weekend on MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. Normally calling with Devin Kerr, but Nate, you're going to have a different partner this week. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Devin got switched over to another game because I guess I could tell you this behind the weeds type stuff. Brian Dunseth is having hip replacement surgery this week, so he is out. So they're shuffling things around a little bit, and I'm getting to call the game this weekend with McBride, so U.S. soccer legend McBride, and I've never met him before in person. We've been texting back and forth a little bit this week, and I'm excited to get to meet one of the true greats in American soccer and work with him this weekend.
So Brian Dunseth is stuck with Max Bretos. Is that what you're saying? I'm sorry. Devin Kerr is stuck with Max Bretos.
And I would tell Max that Max is one of the best. I love that guy.
We had him on a couple of weeks ago. We had a lot of fun. That's the only reason I make the joke. But
he's one of the funniest guys in the league and really good at what he does.
Yeah. So we talked to off air. We had sort of a discussion about sort of your background and the games that you've called, and you've mentioned because of the pandemic and various factors, like you've called games in the booth and you've called games in the stadium, but now you're going to be able to call this game in the stadium this week. Like, what's that environment like, and maybe how's it a little bit different?
Yeah, I think soccer is one of the sports that probably was ahead of a lot of other people from calling games remotely because of the global nature of the sport, right? Sometimes they're having you call games that are taking place in other parts of the world. You know, earlier this year, I got to do two of the Inter Miami preseason tour matches for Apple TV, which was a thrill for me because I got to broadcast the Lionel Messi games. Now, the one in Hong Kong was the infamous one where he didn't play. And for example, that's actually a good example, Jeremiah, of maybe some of the challenges of not being on site. Obviously, it was not going to be feasible for them to fly us all the way to Saudi Arabia and then Hong Kong for the matches. So we called those from the studio. We didn't even know that Lionel Messi wasn't going to play. I guess a lot of people in the crowd didn't on that day either. But you're just disconnected. You know, you're not there with the PR staffs, and you don't get to go down on the field and meet some of the players and coaches. And that face-to-face time makes a huge difference. But also calling the match itself can be a challenge because you're completely dependent on the pictures that are being sent to you, and you really just have to basically react to what you're seeing on camera. Whereas, you know, when I'm in studio, for example, this weekend, if we decide that we want to talk about Alex Ring, or we want to talk about Josh Wolf, and we're telling a story about him, the director, the producer, the camera guys, we're all in communication with one another. So they'll have a camera guy get a close-up shot of Josh Wolf so that you know, hey, this is the person that we're talking about right now. And when you're on remote, they're doing a show for a different group of announcers. And yeah. So you're calling the game and all of a sudden they're showing somebody up in the press box that you're not exactly sure who it is, even maybe sometimes. And you're just trying to talk around the pictures and you don't know what replays might be coming as often, things like that. So there are different challenges for sure. But the best part is, you know, guys, I feel like obviously Austin is at toward the top of the list in this category, but one thing we have in Major League Soccer, especially in this iteration of it, is great stadiums with great atmospheres. And you really get to feel like you're a part when you go to these games. And that's something that I don't know. I don't know how to put a price on how much more enjoyable that is when you're in the stadium and you can feel the energy from the crowd. And obviously that's one of the best parts of it.
Yeah, we know you haven't had a chance to make it to Austin yet, but we would love to welcome you down. Hopefully you get a game here and be able to do that.
Oh man, I love the city of Austin. I was telling Landon beforehand that, you know, I spent a long time doing play by play of college women's basketball in the Big 12. And so I got to come to Austin at least once a year, did football sidelines for the University of Kansas too. So got to go down there for football games as well. And that was always one of my favorite stops was going to Austin. It's just a great town. I felt like it just seemed like when it was announced that Austin was a market that they were looking into in Major League Soccer, it just seemed like that's a no-brainer. There's no way that team is going to be anything but supported down there. It just seems like it fits with the vibe of the town, and you know, being that professional sports team that maybe, you know, obviously University of Texas probably feels like a little bit of a pro sports enterprise down there. But I wasn't surprised at all to see how incredible the atmosphere is. But it's one thing to see it on TV. I can't wait to get to experience it in person someday. I'm looking forward to it.
There's quite a few national voices who didn't think Austin was going to work. And whenever we would hear people talk about that or read that, it was pretty clear who had spent real time in Austin and who only knew about UT. And you're telling me that you have friends here and got like an insider's tour kind of. And I think, yeah, once it got to a certain point here, it was very clear that it was going to be a success. We're here today to talk about Orlando City, though. I know you have gotten to call a handful of their games this season, even into the preseason. I guess let's talk about players in and out. So two of the bigger players they lost are Antonio Carlos at center back, Junior Urso in the midfield. Almost lost Duncan McGuire. This whole saga, he was, for listeners who weren't tracking that, this is like Tom Bogert official, the deal's done. He's on the plane to England. While he's on the plane, news breaks that the deal falls through. So he has to wait until he lands to find this out. Gets there, the deal's off, the deal's back on, and then it turns out that the club didn't submit paperwork on time. So he comes back to Orlando. They also brought in Nico Lodero and Luis Muriel. Nico Lodero's MLS legend. Muriel is a guy from Colombia, I believe, but played some really good seasons in Atalanta and in Italy during some years where they were really successful. He looks a really special player, but it seems like part of the difficulty was trying to play, figuring out what to do with Muriel and Duncan McGuire at the same time, because Muriel was seemingly McGuire's replacement, right?
Right. It's an awkward game. 2 matches ago, they lost in stoppage time at home to Minnesota United. And at the end of that game, we got to see Muriel and McGuire play on the field at the same time in that match as well. But I definitely think that their manager, Oscar Pareja, is working on what the best rotation is with those players. I don't think we rule out the possibility that McGuire, they finally get a deal done in the summer transfer window, right? Like halfway through this season, something could happen there. But you know, when you mentioned players that were outgoing, Landon, I would throw one more in there, and that was Mauricio Pereira, because he was, you know, kind of a number 10 type player for them. And they've brought in Nico Lodero, who is obviously one of the great number 10s in MLS history. But at this stage in his career, I think it's fair to question, does he still have that special element of being able to unlock defenses and create problems in that attacking third from a number 10 position? And to be perfectly honest, I think so far the answer this year has been not quite. And I think the storyline, guys, for Orlando City. Now, look, this is a matchup. This is one of the things I love about MLS. You don't look at matchups on paper and decide what's going to be a good game and not a good game, right? Because if you look at the records of these two teams, you're looking at two teams that don't have a win yet this season. But would it surprise any of us if it turns out to be a wacky game and an interesting game as it goes on? Because that's Major League Soccer. But for Orlando City, look, I from my understanding, reading the quotes from people in the front office with Austin coming into the year, maybe trying to, to calm expectations. Hey, be patient with us. We didn't have a big off season. We're coming off of a bad year. It's going to take a little while. I believe it was even said we're not really going to compete for MLS Cup this year. We're on the flip side. Orlando City was embracing their expectations of, we finished second in the Eastern Conference last year. We feel like if we had been able to beat Columbus, we'd have been the team that won MLS Cup. That was the language from the Orlando City side coming into this preseason, and they feel like it's time to take another step. So there were big expectations for this side coming into the season. Now, they're off to a tough start, right? They're off to an 0-3-1 start. I would point out, and I know Oscar Pereja would point this out, they didn't get off to this bad of a start last year, but they had a slow start a year ago. It wasn't until after League's Cup, they got red hot down the stretch. They were crazy hot, and they finished second. So the season's not over for them by any stretch of the imagination, but they're disappointed with the start to this season for sure, because this is not the way they envisioned it going right out of the gate.
Yeah, having watched them a little bit, how much of their rough form so far do you contribute to them having to balance MLS play and CONCACAF Champions Cup play?
I think that's a great observation, Landon. That's certainly, we've seen that as a theme over the years, right? That it can really take a toll on teams when they have to play in these multiple competitions right out of the gate. And they've suffered some injuries early on in the season already. They've had to rotate the roster a little bit. So I do think that there's something to that. But I don't think that explains the whole story. I do think they are struggling to figure out exactly where the goals are going to come from in the attack, how they're going to fit the pieces together. You know, part of the situation is, you mentioned it with the tumultuous offseason for Maguire. He all of a sudden gets thrust back into the mix. His replacement was not quite ready to play yet right off the bat. They had to wait for his visa to clear. They had to build him up to 90 minutes match fitness. So that rotation hasn't exactly been solid either. And so then when you add on top of it, guys, this is the league of the number 10, right? I mean, you saw it when Austin was good. You got a number 10 that can create and make things happen. It's the catalyst for the team. And I just wonder about that number 10 position for them right now, if they have the playmaker there that they need to get things going. So you put all those things together, and the game that they had against Minnesota was a wacky one. They hadn't scored a goal yet in the year going into that game after their first two games. They hadn't scored a goal in MLS play. In that game, they scored in the first 15 seconds, and they still lost the game. In stoppage time, they didn't convert their chance. A lot of chances in that game, they didn't convert them. So maybe a mixture of things. But, yeah, certainly CONCACAF Champions Cup, I don't think, helped them out any when it comes to the start to the MLS season.
Yeah, well, and then I was going to say, for this week, they've got, what, 7 guys out of international duty? So like knowing that seems like a good opportunity for Austin, but I mean, who are the players to look for? Like for an Austin fan that maybe is not super familiar with Orlando City.
Well, one of the big questions, I think one of the things that they really did last year when they started rolling was they figured out this double pivot situation, with two defensive midfielders that really could boss things in the middle of the field and make things difficult for other teams to play through. And Araujo being one of those players, he went down with an injury in that game against Minnesota United. And my understanding that he's still in a little bit of a day-to-day situation right now. So I think it'll be interesting to see you know, how they cover that if he's not able to go again this weekend. Look, Felipe is a player, is a veteran that they've got to come in and help in those situations. He had a chance to score a goal, guys, right on the doorstep inside the six against Minnesota United and put it up over the bar. And I'm not trying to single him out because he wasn't the only guy that missed some chances in that game. But I think that that middle of the park is something to keep an eye on. Duncan McGuire had a brace in that game against Minnesota that I called, and they were two different type of goals. I think he feels a lot of pressure to go out and produce this year so that he can get that move to Europe across the line in the summertime. So I think that the big names we just covered, Muriel and McGuire, are players to watch because, you know, will they play together in this game? If so, how do they combine with one another?
I think McGuire might be away with the
– go ahead.
I think McGuire is going to be gone with the Olympic squad. And so against
– oh, geez. Oh, God.
Against Atlanta, they played the two of them up top together. McGuire was playing the more traditional striker role, and Muriel was dropping in as kind of in a free role and looked actually quite good as almost playing the 10. They dropped Lodero back into that double pivot with Kyle Smith, and Lodero was playing much deeper, and then Muriel was dropping in and kind of being the playmaker there. And so with McGuire out and then – I guess so. Wilder Cartagena was suspended for that game. He might be coming back. Maybe Austin will get to play against their old friend Felipe here. But it's going to be interesting to see what they do with that midfield and with their attackers, because Facundo Torres is coming back from an injury and only played 15 or 20 minutes in this last game as well.
So you mentioned Wilder Cartagena. He got suspended because he got a red card several minutes after the match was over.
Oh, wow.
Against Minnesota United. There was a dust up after the game. So he got red carded. Torres came off the bench in that game. They didn't have Araujo. So they were going up against a lot in that match this past weekend against Atlanta. And I thought it was interesting what you pointed out about Kyle Smith dropping in, because usually Kyle Smith has been playing as a fullback for that Orlando side. And they brought him into the middle of the field to play as a, you know, defensive midfielder. And I know that Oscar Pareja refers to him as his soldier. He, you know, that's what he says about Kyle Smith. He's a player that he can count on to just put in a shift. He always does what he has to and puts up a fight, not necessarily a player that's going to be, you know, dynamic in the attack or anything like that. But I thought it was interesting the way they manipulated those things. Another thing to keep an eye on, and I beg your pardon for not being up to date on all the international call-up shit. That's one thing I haven't gone through on my notes yet for Orlando.
It's a lot to keep up with. Honest,
It is. I'm not sure, but they brought in David Brekalo, who is playing the right back position with Schlegel. They've been kind of rotating there, but I think Brekalo is the guy they want to partner up with Janssen. Janssen's been the captain of the team and is a very good center back. Was up for Defender of the Year last year. He might be gone with the with.
I think he. I think he's gone for international duty as well.
So I'm
guessing it's going to be
Orlando City right there.
Robin Janssen and maybe Schlegel will be the center back pairing. Which Schlegel seems fine. Robin Janssen is an excellent player. He's one of my favorite center backs in MLS. I think he's fantastic.
Oh yeah, I mean he was in the running for Defender of the Year last year. And it's going to be a challenge for them rotating that back line. I'm looking here because that is something. Let's see. Okay, so David Brekalo, center back, Wilder Cartagena, Pedro Galese, the goalkeeper. Oh my gosh. Duncan McGuire, Abdi Salim. The big ones, though, Brekalo, Cartagena, Galese, and McGuire. Those are big names to be gone from the team right now.
Yeah. Still a few players in this team, though, that I think can hurt Austin, including Ivan Angulo. Speed is not Austin's strength, and so that dynamism that he has up that left side is big. Also, on the other side, Dagur Thorhallsson is a pretty... They had Ruan a couple of years back, who kind of played that similar role. The guy they call Dagger Dan has been pretty dynamic for them this year as well. So I think those two players, with even with all these players missing, could still hurt Austin.
No doubt about it. I don't think that you undersell those things. Dagger Dan's a very good player and gets forward, but I think is a two-way player for them. Angulo, I think, is an interesting one because the pace that you mentioned can cause problems. But I think the thing that they're looking for in Orlando City is that final product a little bit. He had 5 goals and 8 assists a year ago. No goals, no assists so far this season through the first 4 games. There seems to be a trend of some players like that I'm noticing across Major League Soccer. Players with a lot of pace that can stress your back line, but once they get into that final third, do they have the final product? Do they have that decisiveness? And I think they want more from assists in particular from Angulo. He did have 8 assists, as I said, last year, but when you got players like Maguire and Muriel in there, I think that they feel like there needs to be a little more production there. But he is a danger man for sure to keep an eye on in this match because his pace is about as good as it gets in the league.
All right. Well, do you have any other thoughts on Orlando or Austin before we wrap up?
Well, let's see. I mean, I would just say that you never underestimate the grit and fight of an Oscar Pereja-led team. They are always going to be up for a scrap. They're always going to make themselves difficult to play against, regardless of the players that we mentioned that might be missing in this game. And we really didn't talk enough about Facundo Torres, and I need to find out what exactly the status is for him because I know he came off the bench in their last game. But this is a designated player for them who really I think they need to create a lot of things. And one of the things that you'll notice with Facundo Torres in the game is he might be playing out on the right-hand side. You'll see him popping up all the way from right to left through the course of the match. He's not afraid to come across and pick up the ball and get in. They'll invert their wingers. They'll change things up and try to see if they can catch defenses, maybe, you know, getting out of shape a little bit in those regards. And so I think that Torres is a huge key to what they want to do. So seeing what his status is in the game, I think it'll be something to watch out for as well. Look, you guys know your Austin team as well as I do. I've been digging in on them this week. I don't know, maybe I can ask you guys a question or two, but I will say this. I got to spend a lot of time covering Diego Rubio when he was in Kansas City. I was doing the play-by-play for Sporting Kansas City at that time. I don't know how you guys are liking him, but he's a scrapper, just goes and goes, and he's up for a fight too. So I might look for some of him. Those little things he does to try to get under the skin of his opponents and how that works against a scrappy Orlando team.
Yeah, Diego Rubio versus Felipe in the housing front will be an interesting battle to watch if they're on the field together.
Yeah, totally.
He was having to get up to fitness, so we're playing in like 15 to 20 minute stints, but he started the last couple of games. And I think Austin fans are fans of his at this point, and I think the more they see of him, the more they'll like him for sure. All right, Nate Bucchetti will be on the call this weekend. We'll all be at home watching since it's an away one, so we're looking forward to hearing you. And we talked about this a little bit off air, but really appreciate you doing local research as well. You said you listened to our show and you've listened to some other local shows before you go in. I know fans really appreciate that, so thank you for doing that kind of research. We really enjoy that.
Well, hey, you know, this at the risk of sounding like I'm kissing up a little bit, you know, this is a crucial part of the research to me is podcasts like what you guys are doing, because, you know, you're into the day-to-day operations of the club and the moves that they make and the storylines that the fans care about and want to hear about. I was going to tell you, I you might have to explain to me the Moon Tower name, because I listened to a Swoon Tower podcast that was associated with you guys as well.
Awesome.
And one thing I will tell you is I promise I will not be wearing a turtleneck, nor will I be wearing any corduroy pants, because I hear that is a fashion no-no when I listen to the Swoon Town podcast.
Stephanie will be so proud of you for that. So, yeah, we can send you some resources on Moon Towers here in Austin so you can get up to speed on that reference. Yeah. But Nate, thanks so much. We really enjoyed it, and good luck on the call on Saturday.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. Really appreciate it. Anytime.
All right, we want to thank Nate one more time. Before we wrap up, we'd like to remind you to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to continue the conversation, come find us on Twitter at LVAHero87, at @JBentley_ATX, and then at Moontower Soccer on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. And then sign up for the Patreon. We've got some stuff in the works. We're hoping to kick off the Patreon drive here relatively soon. So stay tuned for that. Check out Phil West's Substack, verdealday.substack.com. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a review of the Orlando City match and then preview the first Copa Tejas match with FC Dallas and cover some other Austin FC news. Until then, I'm Landon Cottom.
I'm Jeremiah Bentley.
We'll catch you next time.
When no one is around.
Thank for nothing, see you never.
La gente.
Oh my God.